we're coming in, unfortunately, to the time of the year of the 9 days in Tisha B'Av. And as you know, when you get to Tisha B'Av morning, there's a lot of things that we skip in davening. And of course, we add in a lot of kinos. So there's a lot of rules and regulations that obviously are behind the fact that we skip various things in davening. What are some of the examples?
Tachanun,
Slichos. We say Slichos on every other of the fast days. We do not say it on Tisha B'Av. It's the only fast day void of Slichos. What else?
You don't wear tefillin in the morning.
You don't wear tefillin in Talis in the morning. There's no Avinu Malkeinu. Perhaps we skip one of the brachos. Perhaps we skip korbanos. There's a lot of things that we skip. But there's one thing that's totally missing that you would expect to be there on Tisha B'Av. And that, of course, is the topic of this year. And that is Ne'ilah. Now, why would I say Ne'ilah is Tisha B'Av? You would say Ne'ilah is only Yom Kippur. Imagine if in the middle of Tisha B'Av, a guy got up and said Ne'ilah. You'd think the guy is wacko. He's absolutely wacko. He must have drank on Tisha B'Av. He didn't drink water. He probably drank something else. And he got totally intoxicated and got mixed up. But, excuse me for ruining the myths in your heads, which I might about to do, but Ne'ilah has nothing to do per se with Yom Kippur. Ne'ilah is a fast day oriented prayer. As the Rambam says at the beginning of the Daf HaMakoros, at the beginning of the source sheet, V'chen tiknu tfilat achar tfilat mincha, they made and ordained an additional service after mincha, samuch lishkiyat achama biyom hata'anit bilvad, close to sunset on a day of a fast, in order to add in more requests, more petitions to God, more supplications on a fast day. And this is what's called Ne'ilah. Did you see in these two lines of the Rambam anything about Yom Kippur? What does he talk about? Ne'ilah is a day, is a fast day, ta'anit, oriented, davening.
You don't say it on any other
fast. You're right. The question is, well, very nice. I see the Rambam, but we just passed Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and we didn't say Ne'ilah. We had a Asar B'Teves, and there was no Ne'ilah there either. So how could the Rambam get off and say that this is a fast day oriented prayer? Well, look at me and tell me the answer. The Gemara in the next source says, in Masechet Pesachim, Davnun Dalet Amud Bet, Amar Shmuel says, Shmuel, Ein Ta'anit Zimur B'Bavel, Ela Tisha B'Av Bilvat. There is no such thing as a public fast day. I want you to remember those words, Ta'anit Zibur, a public fast day, except for Tisha B'Av. Can anyone explain those words to me? Because there's a connection between Tisha B'Av and Pesach, what's the connection? It's always coming out the same day. The Shulchan Aruch points out that the way you know the calendar is, as Mr. Weiser says, Atbash, the first letter of the alphabet and the last letter, Aleph of Pesach, is Tav of Tisha B'Av. So because there is a connection between Tisha B'Av and Pesach, allow me to ask the question, Ma'an Ishtana Tisha B'Av Mikol Atzomot, from all the fast days? On all the other fast days, you get up at night, you want to drink a water, you probably can drink water, as long as you didn't, you had da'as like that beforehand. Every one of the four other fast days, Tzom Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and Ta'anit Esther, you eat up until Alot HaShachar, up until dawn, and you break your fast at night. But Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur are the only two fast days that start at night and end at night. So, myth number one, Ne'ilah is an oriented prayer for a fast day. Myth number two, the other fast days are not called halachically public fast days. They are days of fasting, but they're not public fast days. And therefore the Gemara says, Ein ta'anit zibur b'bavel tisha b'av bilvad. And therefore the Gemara asks, indeed, V'amar Rabbi Yochanan Tisha B'Av v'no ken ha'ta'anit zibor, but Rabbi Yochanan said it's not a ta'anit zibor, doesn't have all the rules and regulations of a public fast day. And the Gemara goes into a long discussion and eventually says, "Elamai v'no ken ha'ta'anit zibor v'tfilat ne'ilah." In other words, Tisha B'Av is a public fast day for all states and purposes, except for one thing. What's missing? Ni'ilah. Explains Rashi. Shibetani tzibur. You mitpadalim tefilat ni'ilah. And any other public fast day, they would say ni'ilah. Again, a public fast day that starts at night and ends at night. Kiditnan beperek batu detanit kavav amud bet. The Gemara there says that you say ni'ilah on every public fast day, so you should have said it on Tisha B'Av. For some reason, the Gemara says we don't. Now, just to sum up, ni'ilah has nothing to do with Yom Kippur per se. It has to do with a public fast day. Number two, what is a public fast day?
From night
to night. Night to night. From our perspective, from sunset of the day before till dusk on the day after. However, Teta Kochavim, or dusk is Teta Kochavim in my vocabulary, I may be wrong. Teta Kochavim. There is a machlokis if you can, when the Gemara says, Kol Ta'anit Shelosha Ka'ala V'chamai, not Ta'anit, any fast day that the sun didn't set is not a fast day, meaning it's not considered that you fasted all day. The question is, does that mean what we call Shkia, namely sunset, or does it mean Teta Kochavim? The same machlokis you can take, turn the coin around. When the Gemara says that you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles, Mishitishka HaChama, from the time that the sun goes down, you have the same machlokas there. Does it mean night? Or does it mean sunset? So just to sum up, assumption number one is that Ni'ilah is a fast day prayer. And number two, the only public fast day we have today is Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. Number three, for some reason, there's no Ni'ilah on Tisha B'Av. And that's what we're going to deal with today.
I don't know what the word ni'ilah means, but is ni'ilah...
You don't know what the word ni'ilah means.
No, but is ni'ilah another Shemoneh Esrei after Mincha?
Yes.
And if that's what it is, can a group of Jews get together and always say that, or can they really never do that?
Ni'ilah is not just another prayer. It's a prayer that, as the Rambam says, v'chen tiknu tefillah achar tefillat ha-mincha. It has to be between Mincha and Ma'ariv, at that time of the day when the sun is about to set. It has certain properties to it. It's not what you call an additional prayer per se. Additional prayer per se would probably be what we call a tefillat nedava, a voluntary prayer, which even that has rules and regulations that we try to stay away from today. But in general, no. We're talking about an obligatory prayer that would be in the Kinos book at the end, and it's not. And the question is, why not? It should have been there. It's a ta'anit tzibur. It has all the rules and regulations of a ta'anit tzibur. We don't wear leather shoes. We fast from night to night, etc. Why is it that we do not have ni'ilah? I would like to suggest two reasons this morning. One reason, both of them have to do specifically, obviously, with Tisha B'Av. Because as I said previously, Tisha B'Av is a day that's a public fast day. So if that's the case, ni'ilah should have been there. And the Gemara says it isn't. Why not? The first answer is that even though Tisha B'Av is a fast day, it's also a day of mourning. Mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. In other words, when you come to Yom Kippur, it's a fast day. It's also a holiday, but it's a fast day. When you come to any of the other fast days, it's a day you don't eat and drink. When you come to Tisha B'Av, it's both a fast day, a ta'anit tzibur, and it's also a day of mourning. Now, what's interesting about Tisha B'Av is you can take all the things we're not allowed to do on Tisha B'Av and ask yourselves a very simple question. Is it because it's a day of mourning, or it's because of a fast day? So let's start with the easiest one. Eating and drinking. Is that because it's a fast day or a day of mourning?
Maybe a fast day.
Probably because it's a fast day. Though in the previous year we saw that Shulchan Aruch says we fast on days of mourning. That's the way we express our mourning. But quite frankly, if you want to be very Rosh Katan, as we say in Hebrew, in other words, you don't know nothing from no one, a mourner over a father and a mother sitting Shiva,
they eat.
So probably fasting goes into the category of Ta'anit Tzibur, sitting on the floor.
Mourning
goes into the category of mourning. Leather shoes, marital relations, not anointing your body.
Mourning.
Well, here we can make a very long discussion. It could be because of mourning, because a mourner doesn't do that. But on Yom Kippur, which is not a day of mourning, all the above apply. No marital relations, no leather shoes, and no anointing yourself. No washing yourself. All those things apply on Yom Kippur, as they do on Tisha B'Av. So that is in and of itself a question. When you take all the prohibitions of Tisha B'Av, where do you categorize it? Yeah.
Hold on. It's all about Yom Kippur. You need to touch the other side. You don't all those things. That's a niyah.
Correct. But on Tisha B'Av per se, when you don't do those things, you have to ask yourself, is it because it's a day of mourning, or it's a day of fasting? And by the way, there's nafkaminas between the two. Because the rules and regulations that regulate those inuyim of Yom Kippur may not be the same as the ones on Tisha B'Av. So in a normal case, when your teeth are white, you keep all the five inuyim. But let's say a person needs to wash themselves, or a person needs to, for some reason or another, go ahead and anoint themselves. Perhaps, if it's just because of mourning, it might be less chamur or more chamur than if it's because of a fast day. However, there's no question that Tisha B'Av is also a day of mourning. Point positive, we sit on the floor. Point positive, we don't say hello to each other. Point positive is we don't learn Torah properly. We only learn certain things within our big Torah. So obviously, it's also a day of mourning. Indeed, the Gemara says, "Koha mitzvot anohagot be'avel nohagot b'tisha b'av." All the mitzvot that a mourner does, we do on Tisha B'Av. That statement is not totally true. It's partially true, but we won't get into that now. Suffice it to say that that's the reason Rabbi Ovadia Yosef says that we do not say on Tisha B'Av, Kaddish Titkabel. There's a very long debate, and you can see the sources here in the source sheet. If in a mourning house, do you say Tiskabel? What's Tiskabel to Loton of Vahoton de Chol Beit Yisrael? It's towards the end of the full Kaddish, called Kaddish Shalem, in which we say Titkabel to Lotahon of Vahoton, which means what? You've said it many times. What does it mean? Accept our supplications and our prayers. So there's a long debate, I would say a thick debate. Do you say that in a house of mourning? The majority of poor poskim say yes. However, those that say no, those that say yes, come along and say the reason why people in error didn't say Tadish Tifkabel in a house of mourning is because they thought it's like Tisha B'Av. And on Tisha B'Av, as we know, there are more poskims, you don't say Tiskabel at night or in the morning up to Mincha. Says Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, there's two good reasons I can give why in a house of mourning you don't say Tadish Titkabel, according to those that don't say it. Number one is that usually who says Tadish Titkabel? The Chazan. The Chazan might be the Shliach Tzibor, namely the mourner. That's what usually happens in a mourning house. And therefore, if indeed that's the case, what exactly is the mourner saying? Anyone? I'll read the line about Titkabel tzavot tohon sherak hashatz omeru avor atzibor havei kemotzi echerim yidei chova ve'avel ino ra'ui lekach even shemutuach alav mitat hadin. When you go ahead and you daven, most of the davening you daven up yourself, or you daven properly yourself, depending on your mood. So either you daven it up, you say the words, or you're really davening properly. That's what happens for the majority of davening. But there's certain points in davening where you need a chazan. And one of them is Kaddish. Says Rav Ovadia Yosef, it's not proper that a person that has the Midat Hadin, the judgment of God around his neck, because he's sitting Shiva, God just judged, quote unquote, his father or his mother and said, your life is over. So he's in the middle of that period of judgment. That guy is not the best guy to put up there and say, accept our prayers. So let's take this over to Tisha B'Av. It's a day of great din. HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished us with five terrible things, plus, plus, plus. It's not the day that's appropriate to take Kaddish, Titkabel. Accept our prayers, God. Hi, God, everything's all right. You didn't punish us. Everything's great. Accept my prayer. Not very suitable. And Rabbi Ovadia Yosef says that even though our minhag, and he likes the minhag, is to say Kaddish Yiskabel in a mourning house, he says that's in the house of mourning. So even if you don't like my home Midat Adin thing, says Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, Velo dami letisha ba'av, dehatam hachitayma, shelo yidame, sho'omer titkabel ala kinot. On Tisha B'Av, we don't just have a regular prayer service, we have kinot. So what do we say in our kinot? We say, ay, 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 men, women ate the flesh of their children. God, accept our prayers. Ay, ay, ay! Lecha Hashem atztaka velanu boshet apanim. God, we're embarrassed in front of you. Accept our prayers. Because we did this, we did that, accept our prayers. God, how could you do this to us? Accept my prayers. Is that suitable?
Follow that logic, and why daven at all?
What?
Because he's not, it's the day he's not accepting your prayers.
We didn't say that. We said that within the prayer service, there are elements that we don't want God to accept. In other words, we don't want God to accept necessarily us saying the words that our Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and these people were killed and murdered and in terrible deaths. And we don't want God to accept that that should be what should be. So if Tisha B'Av was just a fast day without kinos, I would have said, say Tadish Tiskabel. But because it's a fast day with kinos, we don't want God to accept that part of our prayer. So we don't say Kaddish Tidkabel. Just to prove my point, when do we say Kaddish Tidkabel on Tisha B'Av? When we don't say Kinos. When is the only prayer service on Tisha B'Av that we don't say Kinos? At Mincha. So when you say Kinos, we don't want God to accept our Kinos. We lament, but we don't want God to accept a lamentation so like in such a way that we'll say, Yehi Ratzon, let it continue this way. So therefore, because Tisha B'Av is a day of din, it's a day of mourning, and just like a mourner, there's din around your shoulder. And we say kinos. We don't want to have too much prayer services in which we say, God, accept our prayers. And since the Rambam said that the reason for ne'ila is lohosif tchina u'bakasha mipnei ha'ta'anit, to add more prayers, Tisha B'Av, we're in between a rock and a hard place. It is a day of fasting, but we don't want God to accept certain parts of the service. So because of that, we don't say ne'ila on Tisha B'Av. First reason, we don't say Ne'ila. It's also a day of mourning. We don't want God to accept the mourning parts of Tisha B'Av. Yeah?
Aren't we also saying that all of his sorrow should be for some kind of a kapara, and it should be for
Actually, I don't know such a thing. Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying that we say the kina on Tisha B'Av and the prayer on Yom Kippur of about the Asara Harugei Malchut, the 10 martyrs. There were probably more than 10 martyrs, but we call them the 10 martyrs. One of them was Rabbi Akiva, you probably know the story. Rav Hananya ben Tardion, that was wrapped in a Sefer Torah. We all know the story. Rav Soloveitchik said, there's two different, we say it on Tisha B'Av, we say it on Yom Kippur, it's not for the same reason. On Yom Kippur, you're right, he said, it's a kapara. Mita tzadikim mechaperet. The death of tzadikim bring atonement. We want atonement on Yom Kippur. But on Tisha B'Av, he said, there's a totally different reason. What's the reason we fast on Tzom Gedalia? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ched Amud Bet, brings the fast days and talks about the five things that happen on Tisha B'Av and why Tisha B'Av is different than the rest. And it talks about Tzom Gedalia and asks, why do we fast on Tzom Gedalia? There's many tzaddikim that died. And the answer the Gemara gives is,
that was the end of any Jewish.
Shkula mitat tzaddikim kisrefat beit Elokeinu. That the death of tzaddikim is on the same level as the Churban Beis HaMikdash, as the destruction of the temple. So it's not a kapara. It's not for atonement. It's that because there's a connection, as the Gemara says, between the death of tzaddikim and the destruction of the temple, that's the reason we say it on Tisha B'Av. So I don't think it's a kapara. I don't think it has anything to do with kapara. Point positive, on Tisha B'Av, in the service, there's nothing about kapara that we don't say every day. We say slach lanu like we do every morning and every evening, but that's it. We don't say avinu malkeinu or anything else. So the first reason is it's a day of mourning. We don't want God to accept the keynote, quite the contrary. We want God to hopefully do the opposite of the keynote.
Right.
So that's the reason we don't add in prayers. Prayers, adding in prayers is saying, God, accept our prayers. We don't want to add in more prayers for that. But the second reason doesn't have to do with Tisha B'Av per se, it has to do with Ne'ila per se. Anytime you have a halachic situation, you can say the reason why we don't say something is because the day doesn't allow it, or perhaps the prayer itself doesn't allow it. So we've taken out Ne'ila from Tisha B'Av. Is it because Tisha B'Av doesn't allow it as a day, because it's also a day of mourning, or it's because Ne'ila is not appropriate? Why would Ne'ila not be appropriate? The answer probably is the reason for Ne'ila. Look at the Yerushalmi, next source on the page. The Gemara in Yerushalmi says, "Binayim leNe'ila." How do we know we have to say Ne'ila? Where does this new prayer come from? So we know the Gemara says that Shachris was ordained by who?
Avraham,
or it's like the Korban Tamid Shel Boker Mincha, Yitzchak, or the like Korban Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im, and Ma'ariv is Yaakov, or the additional parts of the Korban that were burnt later. Ne'ila's not in that Gemara. So where did Ne'ila come from, asked the Yerushalmi? I'm a Rabbi Levi, quoting a pasuk from next week's Haftorah. Gam ki tarbut tefillah neni shomea. God says to Yishayahu Hanavi in Perek Aleph of Yishayahu, the Haftorah of next week, even if you don't just pray, but you pray square. Gam ki tarbu tefillah. What's ribui tefillah?
Increasing
your prayer from a quantitative point of view, and any shomea, I don't hear. God says to Yishayahu, even if you pray a lot, I won't listen to you. Mikan says to Yerushalmi, shekola marbe b'tfilah anena. Therefore the Yerushalmi says, why did God have to tell Yishayahu, hey, tell the Jews, even if they pray a lot, I'm not going to listen to them? Because in a normative situation, if the Jews do pray a lot, God does listen to them. And the Gemara then brings a source from one of the most primary, important individuals from whom we learn almost all the laws of prayer. What's her name? Chana. The Gemara says in the Yerushalmi, Vahayaki here batalit paleli fnei Hashem. The pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, it's the haftarah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, that she went ahead and she prayed a lot before God. Mikan shekola marbe b'tfilah neena. Chana asked for a son. She had that famous prayer. What's her prayer called? This is not a trick question. Tfilat Chana. And in Tfilat Chana, she prayed a lot. And indeed, she was answered. She got Shmuel as a son. So we see that when we want God to listen to us, especially at times of great, dire straits, like Yom Kippur, when we want God to atone for all our sins and to give us a good year, we pray a lot. We add in the Elah because, as we see from this Yerushalmi, God, in a normative situation, listens to people that pray a lot. However, what was the source of the Gemara? The source of the Gemara was Yishayahu HaNavi, on the eve of the destruction, saying that even if you pray a lot, I'm not going to listen to you. What's Tisha B'Av all about? The destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash. So on the day in which we actually mourn for the events of which God said, if you pray a lot, I'm not going to listen, isn't it totally inappropriate for us to pray a lot? Indeed, if you look at the next source, Meseches Brachos Daf Lamed Bet Amud Bet, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, Ninalu Sha'arei Tefillah. From the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the gates of prayer are locked. And the Gemara goes on to say, "Miyom shecharav Beit HaMikdash nifsacha chomat barzel ben Yisrael avim shebashamayim." There is a wall of steel between God and the Jewish people. Our prayers are not answered, and our relationship with God is not as direct as it was before the Churban. So on a day in which we actually commemorate this, namely a day in which that wall of steel was laid in heaven, on the day in which God said that if you pray a lot, I'm not going to listen, the most inappropriate, unsuitable thing is to pray a lot. So indeed, now you ask the good question, why pray at all on Tisha B'Av? So we just came out with the following. Ni'ilah should have been there on Tisha B'Av. It's a Ta'anit Tzibor. The Gemara says it's not. And we brought two reasons. Number one, because the prayer service is not just prayers, it's also kinos. We don't want the kinos to continue to happen. God accept our kinos. We want God to do the opposite of our kinos. So we lament for what we don't have, but we're hoping that God will give us the opposite. So we don't say titkabel, and we don't add in prayers. Number two, because it's the day in which God said, if you pray a lot, I'm not going to listen. So dafka on that day, it's unsuitable. So everyone's looking at me and saying, okay, you gave us two reasons why you don't say ni'ilah. Either because God won't, this is not a day in which we want God to accept our prayers, and therefore we want to pray a lot, because there's certain prayers we don't want God to accept. And number two is because it's a day that God said, even if you pray a lot, I'm not going to listen. So there's no reason to pray Ne'ilah, it's useless. So you're going to look at me and say, so if it's useless to pray Ne'ilah, why do we daven Shachris? Why do we daven Mincha? Why do we daven Ma'ariv? Eicha is suitable. But why do we daven it? Maybe we shouldn't daven. It's a day of satam tefilati. There's a pasuk in Yishayahu. We read it the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, which this year is mamish. a day before. It's actually read on the date in the calendar called the 9th of Av. Why do we daven at all? And here I would like to bring an answer that I feel is one of the most critical answers to being a believing Jew. The same Gemara that I quoted here about the wall of steel between God and the Jewish people goes on. The Gemara goes on and says, hey, if you want to daven, v'no ne'ena, and you weren't answered, continue davening. Mitpalel v'lo ne'ena, if a person davened was not answered, you daven for someone to be healed, and they weren't healed. Chozer u'mitpalel, continue to daven. Why? Explains one of the greatest mashkichim of the former generation, the 20th century, Rav Yerucham Levovitz. Rav Yerucham Levovitz was the mashkiach in the Mirror Yeshiva before the war. And he has a bunch of sichot, a bunch of talks that he gave before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And he explains there something fundamental to what it means to be a believing Jew. My whole life I thought, what does it mean to be a believing Jew? You believe in God. What's not a believing Jew? An atheist. Says Rav Yerucham Levovitz, you're totally wrong. A non-believing Jew is someone that tries something and it doesn't work. So he goes into what he calls Ye'ush. What's Ye'ush?
He gives up.
He gives up. What's a believing Jew? A gentleman who tries and it doesn't work and he tries again. Who is one of the most primary examples that we know within the Gemara of someone that tried, his life's work was put down the drain, and he got up from the mud, brushed it off, and tried again?
Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva!
Everybody knows Sphira, and everybody knows the story of the 24,000 students, but everyone forgets the beginning of that Gemara. How does the Gemara begin? It doesn't begin, 24,000 students were killed, they didn't respect each other, it was terrible. How does the Gemara there begin? Yevam Odaf Samech Bet. I'm a Rabbi Akiva. Hayalo Talmidim B'tzi'ivuto. If a person had students when he was young, Yelo Talmidim B'siknato, to try to have students even when he's older. And he quotes a pasuk, Baboker Zrad Zarecha V'Va'erev Al Tanach Yadecha. In the morning, plant your field, and in the evening, don't go ahead and just go home and put your feet up and say, I've done my work. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. 24,000 students he taught Torah to. 24,000 students he was probably Mesadik Kedushin for. 24,000 students who went to their brises, they consulted with him for every little hiccup they had, and they all died. What did Rabbi Akiva do? He got up, says the Gemara, went to five more students, and says the Gemara, if he wouldn't do that, that would be the end of Torah. That would be the end. And who are those students? Name me one, Rabbi Meir. Stam Mishnah? Rabbi Meir, Gemara and Sanhedrin.
Shimon
Bar Yochai was there. These are people, these are the people that every Mishnah is like, every Tosefta. The Gemara and Masechet Sanhedrin tells us a list of who these people were, and they said, V'kulu Aliba the Rabbi Akiva. They were all students of Rabbi Akiva. In my humble opinion, that's the reason we daven on Tisha B'Av. Even though things didn't work out, and they didn't work out, and we lament for them, and we lament for them in a very profound and deep way. And it's a day of great challenge, and a day in which we question God, but the worst thing in the world we can do is go into despair. And therefore, says Rav Yerucham Levovitz, the Gemara says, even though you weren't answered, try again. And then try again, because you have a connection to God, and you'll need it. And you'll need it in the future. And I don't know what eventually will happen. Perhaps God will say no. But the worst thing in the world is if you go into despair. Because what happens to a person that goes into despair? They don't try. They get depressed and that's the end. Therefore, even though Tisha B'Av is not a day of prayer, it's not a day of Ne'ilah, it's not a day which is appropriate for people to go ahead and say many prayers, it's not a day to give up. Therefore, we hold on. And we hold on very, very strongly, even though it's difficult.
How do you
yes.
You know, I hear what you're saying, and naturally I agree with what you're saying, but most people who suffer from the Holocaust completely turned away against Jewishkeit. Many, many people. Okay? Many, many people. Okay? I would say 90% turned away against it. In society, talking about you know, the Arikira, the special Madrega, and no one really understands how he reached that Madrega. It's accepting there's something supernatural, okay? That he just prepared 24,000 people, students who were killed. More people come very cynical. They come very cynical and say, who needs this? Who needs God? Who needs what do we have here? You know, I spent the whole, you know, I spent my life studying Torah in Germany, and now they slaughter my family. Most people left Yiddishkeit because of this. And I, as a kid, I once, after Moshe, when I was very young, I said, why do you say Nilo for us? You know, I couldn't understand this. We suffered in Germany, and now we're talking about something that happened before that. I mean, at a certain time, there's a lot of cynicism and and people just give up. Okay, they just give up because that's human nature. You can't tell a person whose family suffered in the Holocaust, oh, let's forget about it. You know, we'll go on. It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. You know.
What's the point of the sheriff? One shouldn't do that.
Mr. Weiser is the only person at this table that can answer you. Mr. Weiser with the number on his hand.
There is one person, one Ra, or what is it? They didn't have doubts.
Of course.
I myself, I had doubts. You cannot imagine the condition that we were in now. It's in Hofobal.
It must have been the same. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Well, the thing is this. You know, I go to the yeshiva, I could tell the Torah. Yes, there were passion there. Well, how come I'm still religious? I said, first of all, if I wouldn't be, I would give Hitler another victory. So I just started.
I am going to give a little bit of a Perush Rashi to what Mr. Weiser said. First and foremost, never for a moment will I ever judge anyone that came out of the Holocaust as a non-believing Jew. That's not our place to judge people. Excuse me. There's a Kaddish Baruch Hu, there's a God, we believe that He is the only judge of people. We don't judge people, we can judge actions. We can say this is Usur on Shabbos, and this is Mutter on Shabbos, and I can never for a moment judge people that came out of the Holocaust, either just with doubts, as Mr. Weiser said, or totally throwing away everything, because we can't imagine for a moment with all the movies of what they went through. So I am not one that can answer that question on their behalf. What I could do is say what I've heard from Holocaust survivors through the years. One of the things I've heard is what Mr. Weiser just told us now, and that is he would never want to give Hitler another victory. His personal revenge, if I can use that word, against Hitler is the fact that he's learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael in 2016. I can't think of a more appropriate revenge against Hitler. I am a grandson of Holocaust survivors, not even close to what Mr. Weiser went through, and I think it is my revenge against Hitler and all his cohorts to be teaching Torah this morning in Efrat. Others felt that even though it was difficult, and they have doubts, and they still have doubts, they felt that within their doubts, they hold on to the one entity that was there before and after, and that's God. Elie Wiesel was such a person who questioned God in many of his books, and he says, and I quote, "Sometimes faith hurts. It's not always wonderful to have faith. Sometimes faith hurts." But he didn't leave his faith. My own Rebbe, Rav Amital, said it was very difficult for him to daven on Yantiv Atah Bechartanu Mikol HaAmim. You have chosen us for all the nations. What do you mean you've chosen us? You know what I just went through? Ahavta Otanu Veratzita Banu. You loved us. You wanted us. What, are you kidding? And yet they continued to say it with their doubts. And he taught me one of the most important lessons I have ever had in my life. And that is that you can live with the question. The question doesn't go away. There's no good answer. And I, for one, don't like the answers that, excuse me for saying so, a haphazard, such as, it was worth it for having a state of Israel. 1.5 million kids was worth it to have a state of Israel. If you can go to sleep at night with that answer, I don't know how you sleep well. I can't sleep at night with such an answer. I don't give answers. What I can say is that I am willing to live with the question. And I think part of Tisha B'Av, when we go through the kinos, And indeed, when you read the Kenos properly, you see everything that happened or were told that happened in the Holocaust. In my humble opinion, what you're basically saying is, I'm not willing to let go. I'm not letting you off the hook, God. I'm continuing to hold on. I'm continuing to hold on. Not because I'm dumb and naive, but because I continue to hold on to our relationship, even when the relationship went very, 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 very sour during those terrible years. I'm holding on to this relationship with what I have left, first and foremost for the reasons that Mr. Weiser said, and second of all, because you have to remember, there is freedom of choice in the world, and the Germans made the choice they did. Now, just parenthetically, I just add, there were Germans after the Holocaust that decided the only way they can atone for what they did was one. Anyone know what it was? To become Jewish. I have a tshuva in my possession, two tshuvas in my possession of two different rabbanim that have a question. A Nazi came, they want to become Jewish. Do you accept them into the Jewish people? On the other hand, you have people like Adolf Eichmann, who was caught by, as you know, the Israeli Secret Service, brought to Israel for trial, was tried and convicted to the death penalty, appealed, and then said, they said, you're still going to get the death penalty. So what do you do when you appeal after a court case? What's your only savior? You went to court, you try to appeal, what's left?
Mercy.
Not mercy, it's not called mercy. I hope no one had mercy on this man. Now, what's it called? Everyone knows what it's called. The President of the United States has the same power. A pardon! So he applies to the President then of Israel. His name was Yitzhak Ben Tzvi. For a pardon. And in his pardon he writes, not I'm sorry, not I feel terrible. What does he write? Famous words. They found this year, they actually exposed the letter he wrote and the translation for it. He wrote it in German, they translated it into Hebrew. He wrote, and I quote, the judges didn't understand. I had no power. I was just a soldier fulfilling my orders. It's not my fault. I'm just a soldier fulfilling orders. Well, he took his freedom of choice, which means you're a human being. And for a human being, murder is murder. You can call it a terrorist attack. You can call it anything you want. Murder is murder. And he went ahead and said, I'm just fulfilling orders. So many a times when we speak about holding on to God, we indeed have very big questions as to how God let it happen. But at the same time, I have questions against human beings. How did they allow themselves to do this? And I do not accept for one moment I fulfilled my orders. I don't accept the words of the UN, what's it called? Secretary General, who said at the beginning of January this year, and I quote, it's only natural for the Palestinians who are living under occupation to go ahead and stab Jews. It's only natural to stab, you know, I get up in the morning, it's very hard, difficult life. It's only natural for me to kill you, Bruce. Natural, you know. It's a natural, you understand the natural logic here? Things are tough and difficult. So we're just going to kill a few people. I don't see that as natural. Mr. Weiser.
I just want to add one episode.
Yes.
It was, we were in Auschwitz, we were changed that we got this flight also we got in the most of the film Schwarz, a face Schwarz and the number of people. All of a sudden we realized we have a down marker. So we started a million so in the middle of the Nesser, someone says just screaming out of a cartoon, we quoted this in what was in the air. I don't have to tell you this. So I remember at that time, we were much afraid that the SS is going to hear some noises. We threw them down the floor, we tied them down. I don't think he survived anyway. So he has out of a cartoon, we call him after so long, he says, oh, no. And here I am. I mean, this you were mentioning, so I can tell stories and episodes all day long.
And I think these stories and episodes are very, very important for us to hear because we hear a lot about the terrible tragedy of the Holocaust, but I think for us as religious Jews, part of our experience when we talk about it, especially on Tisha B'Av, which, as Rav Soloveitchik said, should have been Holocaust Memorial Day. Parenthetically, you know who tried to change that in Israel? Not Ben-Gurion. When Begin came to power, he tried to change Yom HaShoah to Tisha B'Av. If he was only successful, and I have the protocol from the Knesset, you can get, it's not a big deal. If you ever want, just to make it clear to people that made Aliyah around this table, the protocol of the Knesset is not like the congregation, what's it called from the Congress? The congressional record. The congressional record means that if a congressman went to talk to some yenta somewhere, it's in the congressional record. He can ask to put anything he ever said into the congressional record. So if he calls his wife and he says, "Hey, darling, how are you?" "I'm fine. How are you?" "Good. Have a good day. Goodbye." He can say, "Please put that into congressional record." So you understand, one day of a congressional record with all the yentas that a congressman talks to is this thick. But the Knesset protocol is what they said in the Knesset itself, in a committee or in the Knesset room itself. So I have the protocol in my possession. And one Tisha B'Av, I went through it during my keynote's presentation, and I have to say that it's too bad he didn't succeed. You want to know why? Had he succeeded, the entire Jewish people in the state of Israel would have, in some way or another, commemorated Tisha B'Av. The religious Jews, obviously, there were those that are not religious, would have, because of the Holocaust, and there would have been one day where the entire Jewish people would have commemorated the biggest tragedy that ever happened. So it's too bad he wasn't successful. I say that's really... it hurts. It hurts that he wasn't successful. It wasn't successful that on that day was not the day. Imagine if that would have been Holocaust Memorial Day. But as religious Jews, I think this question is a question we have to deal with. There's no Ne'ilah on Tisha B'Av. It's not a day of prayers. It's a one day where we have to face our mortality and says God does not always listen to our prayers. I'm sure Jews davened in Warsaw and in Lodz and in all these places, and God did not listen to their prayers. And we have to have a day where we experience that and question, and come up with ways that we can continue beyond it.
Can that question be raised again about changing the date, or has it been buried and can never be raised again?
I'm hoping that it could be raised again. I think it will change.